Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good to see everyone here. It's been a while since I had opportunity to speak in the home office here in Tyler. We've been having meetings all week long, I guess you could say. Well, at least half the week, anyway. I arrived here Wednesday, and we've been kind of cocooned, as they would say, discussing things concerning the work and all the things that we've got going, because there's a lot of balls in the air, as they say, and certainly part of the challenge of doing any kind of missionary work, which we're all a part of, is trying to make sure all those balls stay in the air and none drop. So that's what we were discussing about in many respects. But I did want to bring greetings from Ohio. As correctly mentioned, I'm up there in the North Coast, as some would say. Some would also say the mistake on the lake, which is Lake Erie, because of all the pollution. However, things have changed. They do have now living fish in the lake. They have returned, and consequently we can even go fishing, and you can see somewhere, in some cases, about 15 feet below the surface. So things are looking up. We've come a long way since the days of the Cuyahoga River, which feeds Lake Erie. It goes right through Cleveland, starting on fire. Some of you perhaps remember that. It hit, I think, Time magazine back in the late 60s. Some of you probably weren't even born, I bet. But nevertheless, it has come a long way since then. I did want to take a moment, just before we get started here with the main message, to share with you some exciting news. And I think this is exciting news that all of you need to know. And perhaps if this tape should go out on the tape program, I think all of those out there in the field certainly would appreciate knowing this. And though many perhaps are already getting the news due to the news of the work, because I think we printed this on the news of the work, if I'm not mistaken. But we had a record week of income, which I want to thank and express my deep appreciation and gratitude to all of you here at the home office, as well as those of you out there in the field who have made this a wonderful week. We were able to bring in excess of $94,000 in 1 week, which is a wonderful boost to our reserves, because as many of you perhaps have known, maybe you don't, but we've been operating at somewhat of a deficit from day one of this year, so this, needless to say, will allow us to put some of those revenues back into our reserves and bring things back up to a more comfortable level in that area. We did want to give a special expression of thanks to our Canadian brethren, because part of that $94,000 was a donation from the Canadian folks in the international work of approximately $50,000 that they sent us. This offering for, again, helping the whole, that is the whole work at large, because needless to say, those revenues will be used gratefully for the benefit of the whole, and goes in combination with, and it would be remiss of me not to share with all of you as well, over the last year, offerings that have come in from the Philippines over the last year, I'd say that have been in excess or at least near to around $25,000. And that's American value, not the peso, the Filipino peso. So that is a lot of money for those folks to be providing, again, back to the home office, hoping, as we have tried to do as well, to translate those revenues into intrinsic values for, again, the benefit of this particular work and the missionary work that all of you have taken time to be a part of and devoted your time and energy, and in some cases certainly your own tithes and offerings. So that is something that we're all really happy about and grateful and looking forward, needless to say, to figuring out now where we're going to spend those revenues and continuing to forge ahead in this missionary work, as many of you, as I've said here, are well aware you're a part of. I have been traveling since latter part of last week. I ended up in Middletown, Ohio for Sabbath a week ago today, and then proceeded down to Jackson, Tennessee, keeping Pentecost over there, and then came over here to keep Sabbath with all of you. So I bring greetings from all of those folks in the Tennessee area, as well as southern Ohio, too, since I had opportunity to spend the Sabbath preceding Pentecost with all of those folks. I did want to also mention to you, too, and I think being that I kind of manage the television and the media section or department, you could say, for lack of a better term, of the Church of God International, just to kind of give you a little bit of an update on the television side of things, just to kind of bring you up to date. And I can assure you that television, at least as far as the mechanics are concerned and the production of it and so on, is doing well. We are generally always now, we've got it down to a science, and I think everybody that's involved in the television processing of the materials and the calls and so on and the planning of the programs and getting the programs out on time and what have you are relieved at the fact that we are always generally operating in about a 5 to 8 week ahead. So we've got, as they say, the pipeline filled to where we're always about 5 to 8 weeks ahead of schedule, and that affords me a little bit of time to travel because then I don't have to have my back against the wall, as they say, to where I'm always trying to produce something to stay on top of the schedule, so to speak, you know, to stay current. So it does give you a little bit of breathing room and does afford you once in a while, in case you do drop a ball, to be able to not go into crisis management, if you know what I'm saying. So that's always helpful as well. But television is doing well. We've also, our contracting production company, the Digital Edge Corporation that we have do a lot of our engineering. I produce the program and bring in storylines and so on and footage and pictures and what have you, and we kind of put all that together. He's the engineer and knows how to make all the computers do what I kind of figure out what I want to do and create and so on, and he tells me whether or not I'm out in left field or whether it can be done or not. But he has gone ahead and he's purchased quite a bit of material and also has added some computer packages to his production facility that is going to afford us some additional now opportunities to do some special effects and to continue to progressively develop the Armor of God program to maintain its contemporary look with PowerPoints and footage and pictures and all the things that go along with it to make it hopefully a little bit more of an interesting video experience when you do view the program. So we're anxious to use some of those things, and we're looking forward to continuing to use a lot of that in the creative formats that we have available to us. Consequently, though, the calls have been up over last year. I was just mentioning, I think it was to Jim a little bit, and to Charles here in from Abilene, Texas area, that we're running upwards. I did some little figuring, and unless my figures are wrong or my calculator was working on one battery, it looks like we're running about 48% over last year's calls year to date. 48%. That's more than 30%. I don't want to fall into that trap again, but I'm just saying we're having a good year, and we're excited about that, needless to say, because hopefully, God willing, it does translate into folks that are going to be moved into changing their lives for Jesus Christ. That's at the heart of this work. That's at the heart of our mission. That's at the heart of the whole objective of the Church of God International, and that's what excites all of us. And hopefully it excites you because you can see that your time and your effort and donations and what have you are going toward feeding that source and certainly feeding that purpose of converting lives who have never heard of the kind of understanding that we so, what you could say, passionately believe in terms of the truth of what your Bible has to say between Genesis and Revelation. So it's good that all of this is happening. We're excited about it. Our cost per response is down per response. You have a call per response cost to television versus how many responses you get. You divide that into the costs. Last year, we were running upwards around a little over $20 per call. We're less than $15 per response. Less than $15 per response. So that means we have improved our responses by 48% and have reduced our cost per response by about 25%. You know, so we're doing pretty good in that area. And consequently, we're really pleased with some of this performance, and God willing, we'll continue to experience some of that benefit for the sake of those who are receiving the information more so than anything. But I say all that to also say this, because as they say, there's always, when there's an upside, there's sometimes is a downside. And in this physical life, as many of you probably know, usually, more than likely, there is a downside to something. Currently, we've run into somewhat of a snag. And I want to share this with all of you because it does certainly, and I want to share this with those on the tape program in regards to the need for special prayer for the Church of God's missionary outreach program as it relates to TV. The network, Inspiration Network, we're on two networks, by the way, actually three, including the Canadian network Vision, but really this is unaffected by all of that, so let me just take a moment here to make myself clear. In addition, though, we are on two additional networks here in the North American continent. I'm not talking about Australia or the Philippines, just the North American continent. We're on Vision exclusively in the Canadian area. What I'm about to say does not affect that at all. And also, we're on two United States faith networks called the Word Network and Inspiration. the Word Network, which is going out now via satellite to over 41 different countries around the world, including places like Morocco, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan. We're getting emails now from Pakistan. We had a guy here recently that sent us an email saying, send me more material. I want more material. You know, we like what you say. We went over on the website. We watched the Armor of God. We went to the website. We like that. Just send us material. We want booklets. You know, so, hey, you know, we're in connection. We're trying to figure out how we're going to be able to, you know, make some more connection with these folks. But needless to say, we're going to see and explore those opportunities as they come to us on the international level. The Word Network, though, I say that to say this, is unaffected by what I'm about to share with you. So keep that in mind. So the Word Network and Vision on the North American continent doesn't affect them at all. Inspiration, exclusively the Inspiration Channel, which is a second faith network, has recently rescinded our contract. They have, what you could say, canceled our contract. And the reason being is because they have been notified of certain teachings or what you could say doctrines that we hold dear to our hearts, such as we are not Trinitarian believers. We do not believe that you die, that you go to heaven, or you are tormented if you don't make the grade for all eternity in hell. They have found out that we keep Saturday for Sunday, as some would interpret it, and consequently are a little bit concerned, needless to say concerned enough, to where they have canceled the contract in light of and in spite of the fact that they have Catholic Mass on that station, they have Seventh-day Adventists on that station, and they have non-Trinitarian evangelicals on that station as well. However, here's where the special prayer comes in. We have an opportunity to recover our position by virtue of the, what you could say, passion of our media agent, Mr. Bill Cruz, which my hat, if I was wearing one, I would take it off to him, simply because he's very much in our corner and sees this double standard and doesn't like it. Consequently, he has encouraged us, and we have taken up that gauntlet to proceed with addressing the Inspiration Channel in a letter and hoping to go ahead and have a meeting with them. Well, right now, it seems as though that meeting will take place in the next couple of weeks. So I'm asking all of you and those of you there on the tape program to pray a little special prayer in regards that God will show favor and we will be able to indeed retain this particular network station, because it does account currently, Inspiration does currently account for approximately 20% of our calls. 20% of our calls. So that's a formidable amount of calls coming in. Consequently, if we can salvage it, it'd be nice to do that, if you know what I'm saying. So we would certainly appreciate your prayers in helping us through that, and as a result, hopefully, God willing, favor will be accomplished and Inspiration will have opportunity once they get to meet us, and the fact that we're not fanatics and so on and cultish in our orientation will recognize that perhaps they just overreacted to some information that they received. So we're looking forward to that, hopefully a successful meeting in that regard and a successful end to that meeting that will be in our favor. Do please keep that in your prayers. I wanted to make mention, as Gerald was mentioning also and alluded to, the fact that Charles, along with Benny Sharp and the rest of the board of directors, are up in the Fayetteville, Arkansas area holding board meetings all this weekend. Again, another additional item to pray for, not only that the meetings will be successful and all the issues that they need to discuss, as law requires the board of directors of this organization to do, will be accomplished and discussed correctly and clearly, but that they'll be able to return safely to their homes, because a lot of those guys are traveling like myself, and we greatly appreciate your prayers when we get up in those, what you could say, steel cylinders, where they pressurize you and throw you at 35,000 feet and catapult you at about 500 miles an hour from one point to the other, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, that's it's quite disconcerting, to say the least, when you're up there. It's even, what I could say, more thrilling than a roller coaster at Cedar Point, which is a big amusement park over in the Cleveland, Ohio area. So do keep all of the gentlemen, be they ministers and or hosts, speakers in general, and brethren, who are indeed traveling during these holy day seasons, that they would be able to go ahead and get home safely in their travels. Okay, you want to stand up and take a breather a little bit? Have I been talking too fast, too much? Shall we just launch right into this? All right, we'll just go ahead and get into this here. I did prepare a presentation I wanted to share with all of you, believe it or not. There's so much to talk about. I could just go on announcing and make more announcements, but I think we'll interrupt myself here to discuss something that I wanted to share with all of you today. It's probably more like an observation that is underscored by an historical lesson. And I don't think many of you would debate the fact that over the course of human history, it's obvious by virtue of the track record of mankind, I think all of you would agree, that mankind has developed a legacy of pain, suffering, injustices, and tragedy after tragedy after tragedy. I mean, I don't, even if you're just a, what you could say, superficial student of history, you don't even have to go very deep into historical records or footprints of nations, and I don't care who they are. They could be the Carthaginians. They could be the Parthians. They could be the Romans. They could be the Celtics. They could be the Mongolians. They could be the Assyrian empires. Empire after empire after empire, as you go down through history, you will notice that consistently they are, and it's been proven by virtue of the track record that you and I see, they rise, and then what? They fall. Sometimes they resurrect. They get reestablished. But sure enough, don't blink your eyes, because if you do, you might miss. They get overthrown in the long run, if you know what I'm saying. And history has also illustrated to all of us, and I don't think there's much debate on this, that regardless of affluence, regardless of the technology, Rome was pretty highly technologically developed for its time, for its day, for its age. Regardless of the size of its military, and there's no question about the size of those military Roman legions. We know Rome stands as a beacon of an empire being overconfident, and lo and behold, getting broadsided and snake bit, and first thing you know, falling apart and dismantling. But it did come back in 554 AD and had kind of a second wind a little bit under Justinian, and then a few other resurrections down through history. That goes without saying. But again, it doesn't matter, and history shows and proves this point, that regardless of affluence, regardless of what you could say military might, regardless of technology, or even the law, the rule of law, doesn't matter. And again, you can go back and you can look at even Israel. Even Israel, the nation of Israel, had its problems, especially up through the years of the judges, prior to the final, what you could say, window of success it experienced for about 80 years under the rule of David and Solomon, his son. There was about an 80-year window where Israel was pretty much the top dog of the neighborhood where they lived, and they had a lot of alliances with the Phoenicians and so forth, and there was a small little window where there was great affluence, and Israel was pretty much what you could say at that point, the old nation of Israel, the original nation of Israel, king of the mountain in that area. But regardless, even they fell. Eventually, war, destruction, and or cultural breakdown occurs. And this cycle in human history, you know and I know, gets proved out for thousands of years. The cycle gets repeated, doesn't it? Why? Well, a portion of my observation begins over here in Romans. I'd like to turn there for a moment. The book of Romans. Now, the Apostle Paul, in the context of Romans chapter 8, which is where I went, is proceeding with a subject that really is part of chapter 7, and now he's reinforcing and kind of bringing this whole concept to full fruition here. But in chapter 8, in the course of this presentation, he makes a statement that's cogent to what I'm trying to talk about here a little bit, and which is part and parcel to the observation I want to share with you. And this is part and parcel to the observation. I'm not going to tell you the complete observation yet until we unfold the presentation a little bit more here. But in Romans 8, he touches on it a little bit. Verse 7. Why? Why is it that these cycles, let me remind us, this is the question, are repeated over and over and over? Why is it that empire after empire, regardless of affluence, regardless of technology, regardless of size of military, regardless of the rule of law, again, over and over and over, repeats its cycle of war, destruction, and or cultural breakdown, and or maybe all of the above? that contribute to this constant, consistent, historical legacy of human empires that fail time after time after time. Right here, beginning in verse 7, Paul states something very cogent to answering that question. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God. That Greek word means it's opposed. It is at variance. By sheer nature of us, in our carnal, meat-headed kind of mode of operandi, because we're very materialistic in our references. You know, we look for, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, survival. You know, I want to be warm. I want to be cool when I'm in Texas in June. You know, I want to be full when I go to bed. I want to have a full stomach. You know, when I get up in the morning, I'd like to have a nice breakfast, orange juice, maybe a little coffee, you know, nice egg and some whole wheat toast, maybe some honey, you know, whatever it may be, you know, that kind of stuff. I'd like to, you know, just be comfortable. I'm a creature of comforts. And we think in these terms. Our carnal nature, by nature, is at variance, is opposed, and in some cases, hostile, flat out hostile toward God. Don't give me a God that's going to interfere in my life. I don't want a God that tells me rules and regulations that have to cause me to modify my behavior. Because guess what? That crimps my style. And I got style, see. I got a certain way of doing things. And when I set my will and I set my heart and I've got my venue of approach, don't get in my way. Because I'm here to please me first, you see. Because that's what it's all about. And then those who I please around me, hey, that's cool as long as you give me all the attention. And the credit, you know. And the attaboys and all the accolades that go along with it, you see. And so, by nature, we are like that. Paul's mentioning observation that contributes to his context here, but certainly is at what you could say the premise of what we're talking about here a little bit today. Verse 7, let me reiterate, because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be. So then, they that are in the flesh cannot please God. Now, Paul continues on here. I talked about this in Pentecost a little bit, not this particular segment I'm talking about today, but he goes on, as I mentioned in Pentecost, to suggest the fact that we've got to reorient our outlook, you see. We've got to reorient our priorities. We've got to reorient our points of view and our perceptions to where they become more spiritually oriented rather than physically and materially prioritized. But the fact is, in this particular case, and what Paul is telling us here, is that what is at the heart and underscores the what you could say failures of man and his inability to achieve lasting peace is, frankly, flat out, I submit to all of us, brethren, the fact that he is hostile toward God and will not submit to God. And that leads, brethren, to man's inability to control certain carnal appetites. Because, you see, we don't use God's laws or God's expectations or what God would prefer as our guiding posts and our guidelines to keep us within and on the path. Once you become a law unto yourself, guess what rules you? Your conscience. And what develops your conscience? Generally, culture. If you're real narcissistic, sometimes not even culture will affect you. What affects you is you. Whatever serves your need, whatever serves your purpose, regardless of culture, that's what's going to be fed. That's going to be the approach. Because look, I don't need culture to influence me. I'm a culture unto myself, you see. And so I'm going to do as I please. And you know what? I'm going to be a trendsetter, you know. Like some of these pop stars, you know, Madonna. Madonna is a trendsetter. She started wearing her underwear as outerwear. Right? And she developed a whole new style. And today you can go into the malls. Today you can go into the malls and see 13, 14, 15, and 16-year-old little girls wearing underwear for outerwear. Where did that come from? Because Madonna since has gone on. She's writing children's books. She's got children. and she's moving on, you know, in certain areas of her life with different perspectives and views. But in the wake of her trend setting, what has happened to modesty? What has happened to particular trends of fashion? She's had impact. You go back further. The Beatles. What did the Beatles do for men in long hair? Didn't they break? They broke a threshold. And the 60s, you saw an explosion with the English invasion of music, with the Dave Clark Five and the Beatles, you know, and Peter and Gordon and all these guys that came in from England and that London area and so on, changing culture, impacting culture and music. And music, you see. And you go back even further, you know, and you can see these changes that go on. How swimwear has changed. You ever notice how swimwear has changed? Do you know what they were wearing, ladies and guys, in the 1890s, going swimming? It was no wonder you could swim. Because you would drown with all those clothes on. You know what I'm saying? You ever see some of those pictures of some of those guys? And then you come forward, and then all of a sudden you see a little bit of shoulder. Then you see the single piece with the hole in the back, so you see a little back. Yeah? Or the hole in the front, you see a little stomach. And now we have what are called Speedos and thongs. Right? Speedo and thongs. So, I mean, we are affected, brethren, in so many ways by these, what you could say, uncontrollable carnal habits that unfortunately sometimes get exploited by what I call the noise around us / culture around us that sometimes can confuse us if our noses aren't here weighing, balancing, using common sense and comparing the relativity of what we see and what God expects. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's the same God he was in the gay 90s. He's the same God as he is today, you see. And he's going to be the same God in 20 to 30 to 40 years. It's up to us to make the choices that are necessary to exercise control as connected to this word that translate into the things we think, the things we say, the things we do. And those things then determine our modesty, our concept of modesty, our concept of temperance, and so on. Because we're up against, in many respects, a stacked deck in some cases. Because if in fact what I've already said, you keep this in mind now, in regards to the fact that we live in a society that unfortunately, because we are carnal-minded by nature, that we tend to have a tendency to not control these carnal appetites, if that's not bad enough, what's worse is then many people today attempt to use humanistic methods to resolve their issues of confusion, leaving again God out of the picture. And sometimes they just exacerbate the problem and make a bad situation worse because they're still adding more confusion to their already confused state. Because you see, our battle, and we are in a battle, don't underestimate the fact, we're in conflict. And we're in conflict in three major categories, or from three major avenues of approach. We've got three major avenues approaching us as Christians and as all people on earth. One, we are in conflict with the forces of evil. Now, I'm not going to turn there. I'll just reference it. You can look it up later, Ephesians chapter 6, verse about 12. Your battle is not against flesh and blood. Bottom line, at the end of the day, if the truth were known, you are battling evil forces in a different matrix, to use a modern term, that you can't see, but they can see you, so they got point advantage in that regard. But it's something never to underestimate their influences, because they have additional venues of influence. Here's the venues of influence. They have our carnal nature, which is broken out into three subpoints. It's mentioned in 1 John chapter 2, verse about 16. I'm not going to again turn there. I'm just going to reference it. You know the scripture. Lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, pride, vanity of life. Pride of life. Three major sub-areas that are all about you and me. All about us. Our carnal nature. Eyes, appetite, pride, vanity, you know. And the third category, the world. I'd like to have a Maserati. I'd like to have a 10,000 square foot home. You know, some of these ball players have basketball courts in their houses. You know, I'd like to have a house with a basketball court. It'd be kind of neat, I think. You know, a swimming pool. I'd like to have that, you know. I'd like to be able to just get on my private jet and, like Elvis Presley used to do, fly from Memphis to Colorado to get a pizza. You know, he'd get all of his buddies on his airplane, fly to Colorado, and get a pizza. And they'd have the pizza delivered onto the tarmac, and then they'd go back to Memphis. I mean, you know, the world, fast cars, you know, easy life, lots of money, you know, living off plastic, bling bling and all that stuff, that's neat stuff, you know. That's neat stuff. And there's a pull, there's an appeal to that. Because what do you see on television? What do you see in the hidden persuaders in books using color, red? You know what red means? Stop. Psychologically, you ever read the book Hidden Persuaders? Oh, interesting book on how advertisers get your attention, yours and my attention. And the colors they use, yellow, green, red. Oh, yeah, yeah. Notice how much red and yellow is used in some of these tabloids on their headlines. Then you open it up, it's black and white, kind of drab. But on the front cover, boy, it's a little color. Why is that? To grab your attention. You know, grab your attention. Walk through a grocery store, notice the colors. Notice the colors. They're hidden persuaders. Get the book, Hidden Persuaders. It's an amazing book. You'll never go shopping the same again. But at any rate, the point is we have pressures on us. We have pressures on us as Christians, brethren, and we need to be aware of these pressures because they are geared toward, throughout the world, geared toward compromising your Christian values. That goes without saying. They are geared toward compromising your Christian values. You are not living in what is considered to be, even though many would like you to believe, in broadest general term, perhaps the United States is a Christian society, I guess the closest we could say, but in many respects, that's a real stretch. That is a real, real stretch. And yet we have pressures on us as Christians to adopt certain political parties, to look down our noses at other political parties, to adopt certain political views, and to look down our noses at other political views. And we have oftentimes in some cases, if we allow that to polarize ourselves, can have disharmony even in the church when the church ought to be apolitical, you see. I've already mentioned and touched on clothing and styles and things that we, in a culture that we live in, become what you could say accustomed to it. And once you begin to become accustomed to something, it's easier to accept, embrace, and compromise it. Case in point, piercings. Young people allowing themselves, to pierce areas of their body that I wouldn't even dream of piercing. I'll go as far as the tongue, but I'll stop right there if you know what I'm saying. Tattoos. And then the specific, site-specific locations of those tattoos. And see, young people, and unfortunately in some cases, even moms and dads, who should be showing examples, but have no sense about themselves either, and I know this may not be popular, but it's a fact, brethren, that they get drawn into this. I mean, why do you strategically place a tattoo at a particular part of your anatomy? What for? To draw eyeballs and attention to that part of your anatomy. I mean, that's the only reason. I mean, I can't think of any other reason unless, you know, it's just purely for private purposes, you know. But the point is, there is biblical precedent, you know, not to mark your bodies, not to be like the heathen, you know. I've often said, well, you know, people make a stand, I don't keep Christmas. Oh, no way, I don't keep Christmas. But they are tattooed up and down, you know, all over the place. Well, why are you tattooing your body? You know, don't tattoo your body. And if you're going to tattoo your body, well, you might as well keep Christmas. They're both heathen. You know, from that standpoint, if that's what you're talking about, if that's the context you're trying to present it in, you see. So we need to understand and try to, what you could say, balance some of these things and try to remove ourselves from double standards, because unfortunately, if we're not careful, in the long run, we can begin to adopt attitudes as well. And I, you know, I don't even want to go off into music, from head banging, you know, rock and roll music, to some of this rap music, that really in some regards, I mean, you know, you've got Megadeth groups like that, you know, and different other rap artists that are just in some cases flat out pornographic in some areas and violently oriented, and do nothing but with their rhythms and syncopations. And I'm an old drummer. I mean, I used to play rock and roll years ago when I was in another lifetime. And consequently, you know, I know what it is about beats, Led Zeppelin, you know, and all those groups that were of my era that I used to play their music when we used to play out in clubs and stuff, you know. And that's just the way it is. I mean, it's music to rile people up, to get them dancing, to get them drinking, to let loose, to drop inhibitions, and to be something you're not for the evening. And guess what? Lo and behold, you got a girl turning up in Aruba missing. Because they get carried away, uncontrollable appetites, don't realize it, become vulnerable. Maybe she had something put in her drink and didn't even realize it and got pulled away. That could have happened. Or by the same token, like that gal with that superstar Kobe Bryant, you know, come on up to my room. Why go up to the room? Why go up to the room? You know? It starts with choices. It starts with choices. Why get the tattoo? Why buy the skirt that's halfway up your thigh? Why buy the tight pants that show certain parts of your anatomy that you got this, that, or the other thing, you know? Why do that? We as Christians, brethren, need to use common sense in correlation and in connection with God's Word to say, does this fit or doesn't it? You know, I've often said, before you do something, ask yourself, what would Jesus do? Okay. Some of you know that. Well, let me say this, in clothing and apparel and so forth, and the way you take care of yourself hygienically and so on, how would you feel standing before Jesus, dressed the way you're dressed, smelling the way you smell, looking the way you look? Would you be proud? Would you be comfortable? Would you be at ease standing in the presence of Jesus Christ with the way you look, you see? Maybe we need to add that to it as well. Because today, brethren, we Christians are vulnerable. The pressures are immense. They're enormous. And especially on our young people. The peer pressure on our young people to get with it and to, if you're not, to be brutally mocked, brutally made fun of, to be brutally ostracized and alienated and polarized to where, you know, at an age when, especially you're in teens, the 13 to 20 year old range, want to be accepted by groups and part of the gang, so to speak, and have friends and what have you. Now all of a sudden you're going to make a stand. It takes courage. It takes courage to say, no, I'm not getting a tattoo above my, you know what, on the back here. I don't want anybody necessarily looking at my rear end. You know, so I'm not going to bring undue, unnecessary attention to that. I'm just not going to do that. You know. Or I'm not going to wear that thong, you know. I'm not going to do that because I don't want anybody looking at my, you know, what's, whatever, you know. Because why do you wear those things? I mean, let's be honest about it. It starts with the mind, with the decision when you're in the store, when you buy it. Why am I buying that? That's the heart. That's the heart, you see. That's the heart. Why am I drinking that? I've already had 10. Why am I playing that? I've already lost $20,000. Why am I smoking that? I'm already dizzy. I'm already dying of cancer. I've already got a buzz. You see, Charles and I spent quite a bit of time yesterday going through about 60 or so prayer requests from people that write into us as a result of the work we together
together are doing as a work. Some of those people said, pray for me. I'm battling with homosexuality. Pray for me. I'm a drunk. Pray for me. I've been battling cigar smoking for 40 years, and I can't seem to kick it. I know I need to because I know it's wrong, you see. Help and pray for me. My health is terrible. This one sticks out in my mind. My health is terrible. I've got, he had the blood disease. He had all kinds of things. And then as he goes on, he says, and also my lusts for men. So when you read his sicknesses and so forth, you begin as you read down through the letter to see that, well, obviously the lifestyle had something to do with it. We as Christians, brethren, oftentimes too, and I hope it becomes fewer and fewer as times, that is, in our personal lives as we go forward walking with Christ, because it should, because hopefully we get wiser and wiser. But so often we, even as Christians, we ask God for healing when indeed we don't choose to change the cycles and break the habits. If you've got high blood pressure and diabetes and you're 50, 60, 70 pounds overweight, what are you eating? Unless, of course, you know, it's a thyroid problem or something, I understand. But the reality of it is, what are you doing to yourself? And if you've got these problems, read some books. I mean, the internet is loaded with certain means and venues by which can educate you even holistically to a certain point. Now, I'm not against doctors, don't get me wrong. Don't take me out of context here. They all have their place and their proper use within balance and so on. But if you are taking pharmaceuticals, believe you me, be careful when you start mixing them. If you're taking something for blood pressure, watch out if you get a cut or something and they give you an antibiotic, lest that antibiotic has an ill combinational effect on your blood pressure medicine. You know, beware of those things. Don't be negligent in those duties of what you're taking and ingesting. Because every time, remember, they're chemicals. Every time you add a chemical, you create a different, I call it witch's brew. You know, it's like an old witch with a little frog and a little this and a little that, you know, a little hair from a dog, a little rat tail, you know. We mix it up and you take this and you take that, you know. You'd be surprised how much in some cases pharmaceuticals are made up of that, some of that stuff. But put that to the side. The point that I want to make is the reality, you've got to be careful. Got to be careful. Be prudent. Be cautious on some of this stuff that you take and ingest. But my point is here in this regard is we are in conflict with some of these things, and we need to be alert to the things that we do to ourselves. And if we are suffering the effects of certain things in our life, we need to take a look at our lifestyles first of all to see what's going on. Maybe we do need to lose some weight. Maybe we do need to change our way we talk, the way we think. Maybe we need to somehow reduce the stress in our life, so maybe perhaps rather than taking a negative approach toward life, we need to learn how to reprogram our mind to be a little bit more positive. Where do you start with that? Well, maybe my Bible study isn't up to stuff. Maybe I need to just read Psalms. I'm going to make a commitment to myself that when I get up in the morning, I'm going to read one chapter of the book of Psalms before I even brush my teeth. You know, because my mind is clear. I just broke a fast. I woke up. I've got nothing on my mind yet. I haven't turned on CNN, Fox News, whatever I watch in the morning. I haven't turned nothing on. I haven't even made coffee. I haven't even got up yet. Where's my Bible? The nightstand. Psalms. Proverbs. The thought for the day. Proverbs. Soft answer will turn away wrath. You go to work, it's on your mind. Boss says, da-da-da-da-da-da-da! Soft answer turns away wrath. Oh, okay. It's on your mind, you know. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it'll only work 2 out of 3, but that's better than batting 0, right? But my point is, we've got to try these things. We've got to be proactive. We've got to be, what you could say, engaged. If you're not, brethren, as I told the brethren in Jackson, Tennessee, as we already read too, human nature does not evolve into a Christian. It doesn't happen automatically. The physics of human nature do not automatically breed Christian attributes and values. If you heat up water to 212 degrees, I think it is, it converts to what? Steam. If you freeze water below 32 degrees F, unless it's deionized water, but nevertheless, if you freeze water, it goes to ice. It solidifies, you see.
We have tadpoles that convert to frogs. A tadpole cannot convert to a rhinoceros. Doesn't happen that way, does it? And caterpillars, they into a butterfly. They don't go into elephants or dogs or cats. You see, that's physics. That's law. Christians, brethren, it takes time, effort. Time and effort. Romans chapter 7, you should be there. Romans 8, Romans chapter 7. Paul says, what shall we say then? Verse 7, Romans 7. Is the law sin? God forbid. No, I had not known sin but by the law. For I had not known lust, except the law said, don't covet. Oh, okay. So then, what does that mean? Well, Paul dropped down here to verse 12. He says in verse 12, chapter 7, book of Romans, therefore, wherefore, the law is holy. Commandment holy and just and good. Why? Because it tells me right from wrong. It defines what God expects of me, so I know. There's no question about it. There's no probably. There's no if, ands, or maybes, or buts about it. It's what God says, this is what I'd like you to do. So stay off of this, stay off of that, walk this way, and you'll be okay, you see. So in that regard, because the Ten Commandments are foundational to this behavioral, what you could say, pattern, this behavioral mold, the law was not nailed to the cross. It stands as a beacon, brethren, a beacon, a contemporary beacon, a beacon that's for the 21st century Christian, as a means by which you and I can identify right from wrong. Otherwise, we're left with our own conscience to determine and define what's right from wrong. And some people, believe you me, will not agree with everything you think is right and you think is wrong. They've got their own ideas about what's right and wrong, you see. What's one man's poison, another man's food, as they say. You've heard all these little cliches. So we got to be careful about that. God's law takes the question about this, questioning out of that equation. He goes on here, he says, was then that which is good made death unto me? God forbid. No, but sin, that it might appear sin. That's what the law is for, so that it identifies the working of something that breeds death. Sin breeds death. And so the law was there so that it could tell you that, look, you are diseased. And the more you participate in it, the more the disease embraces you. Therefore, you've got to know and you've got to learn to break loose from that disease. It's working death in you, you see. You've got to forego it. You've got to abandon it. And consequently, that's what Paul is talking about in this regard and in this respect about the fact that that's why the law is good. And he goes on here in verse 14, for we know that the law is spiritual, I'm carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I allow not. For what I would, that do I not. But what I hate, that's what I do. Paul is, what you could say here, illustrating an observation in his own life. He's saying very clearly, I got a conflict in me. And as you proceed down through this writing, this dialogue that Paul develops, you will see that Paul, as much as you may perceive him to be a spiritual giant and so forth, was a man, a human, and had his own foibles, and had his own conflicts, and wrestled with his own passions, and dealt with things that warred against the spirit in him that in his mind he wanted to do, but because of certain appeals, certain appetites, certain, what you could say, perhaps attitudes that he had being brought up the way he was brought up. He was a Pharisee, taught in the school of Gamaliel and all these things. He had a lot of baggage. He hauled off Christians and separated families there for quite a bit of time there prior to his conversion. He had all this guilt that he walked around with all the rest of his life. He felt he was unworthy of the calling he received and yada, 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 if you know what I'm saying on all this. And so he says here, look, I've got the same thing. We're in conflict, brethren. We are in a battle. We're in a war. And unless you, as Jesus said, take the kingdom by force, guess what? You're going to lose the battle. So if you're not serious about this walk, I have a friend, and I laugh at it now, because at the time I really was so new in God's work and in my own calling many years ago now, that I really didn't know what to tell him, but he would always tell me, and this was one of the guys I used to pal around with in my other life that I mentioned, and he would say, Bill, you lost your mind? Religion's for weak people.
Religion is for losers, man. They're for insecure people. They're codependent people. You don't need God like that. You don't need religion, man. You see, that was a little bit of the peer pressure I had. That was part of the wind blowing my seed falling by the wayside. That perhaps could have blown me away. Which many of you could probably, if you thought real hard, remember some of the winds blowing when your seed fell by the wayside. You see, that perhaps were used to discourage you and to detour you off that way as you began to, in your embryonic stage, get started in this calling, you see. I had pressures from my old buddies that we played in the band and hung around and, you know what, did all the things I won't bore you with because I don't want your socks roll up and down. But at any rate, you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's just things along these lines that we've got to deal and realize that, you know, we are in a battle. Mankind has been in a battle for millennia. He's tried all kinds of management techniques and formats. We call it socialism. We call it communism. We call it monarchism. We call it dictatorships, you see. We call it democracy. We call it a republic. Even anarchy was tried, you know. I mean, and man continues to fail. He tries cultural revolutions. You've heard it, the Renaissance, the Industrial Age, remember, the Agricultural Age, the Space Age, the Computer Age. The Computer Age was to be the answer to all of our ills, to afford us, you know, to be able to do more things in a shorter amount of time. I'll tell you what, I got more spam than I know what to do with. And viruses, I've had to actually throw a computer away because it became so infected with virus. After about 3 or 4 years, I guess I got away with it pretty well. But, you know, even in spite of some of these guards that you get and so on, and this virus scavenger, and then you got cookies and spyware and all this stuff. You know, I used to think a cookie was what you ate, you know, and a spyware was a movie, a James Bond movie or something. Now it's they load your computer up with this stuff, and then you get more spams because now they know where you are, and they put you on a regular hit, and all of a sudden you got this coming up and that coming up and this coming up, and lo and behold, you're not, you know, you're not asking this. You're just being solicited. Computers? You know, they're not the answer, brother. Man's organized the League of Nations, the United Nations, UNICEF, the United Way, Red Cross, Feed the Children. You know, it breaks your heart. I watch this program occasionally, you know, Feed the Children, and it breaks your heart to see what's going on over there in the Sudan, to see what's going on over there in Zimbabwe and the Congo and so on, and how people just because they're so, what you could say, selfish and ignorant, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, they're just not educated in hygiene and ability to develop agriculture and so on. I'm not even looking at faults and so on. I'm just saying it is what it is, you see. It's what we're dealing with. And these are real-life situations and pockets, whether they be in Africa, the Middle East, South America, Southeast Asia, over there, you know, in Vietnam, over there in Thailand, whatever it may be. It is a tough world we're living in, is my point. And it is not evenly distributed. Not evenly distributed in terms of the wealth and the peace. And so consequently, you have a lot of these organizations that have been bred, Christian missionary works, Feed the World, the rock and roll people who got together, I think it was called Feed the World or whatever it was. I forget now, maybe that's not the exact name of it, where all those musicians got together and they played that music and sold an album, all the proceeds, you know. I mean, these are all good, and I'm not criticizing them, don't get me wrong. I'm not mocking them or, you know, trying to diminish their values. They're all good efforts. They're all, you know, noble efforts and attempts to try to, what you could say, curb some of the tragedy of hunger and so on and famine and what have you. But it's not long-lasting. They're bumps along the road. They're not long-term. They're short-term solutions because it wouldn't be long before the Red Cross would run out of blood. Wouldn't be long before UNICEF would be broke. I mean, it's just too much for any organization. And look at the UN. Again, with human nature, food for oil. The UN is developed for what? For a good purpose. You know, United Nations. But then what do you have? You've got corruption. And if it won't be this, with this regime, it'll be another regime. And how can I say that for sure? Because human nature, brethren, it's carnal. It's selfish. It's narcissistic. And your Bible's clear that until it changes the legacy, the cycles, the habits, the repeats are not going to stop. Man is not his solution to his problems.
man is not. Man is no way and nowhere near. And futuristically, the fact is that, frankly, it's not going to change. And unfortunately, as I say, man is destined in that regard to fail. And why do I say that? I say it simply because Jesus Christ and the Father are not the center of humankind's persona, mentality, outlook, perspective, priority, design. Man is hostile toward God in nature. He's even tried different religions. He's made cows thinking they were gods, you know. He's assigned certain imageries like Neptune to be the god of the ocean, you know, and all these things. Venus, the god of love, you know. Where did all this stuff come from? Imaginations of men. What have they done for man? Nothing. Not a thing. Not a thing. Over here in Revelation chapter 18, many of you are familiar with much of the imagery of Revelation. I just want to illustrate something here as we begin to bring this to a close. Here in the book of Revelation chapter 18, and I'm just going to reference this here, but here is a description of a system at the end time. And you all know, and I'm sure aware of the fact, in Daniel 7, there's a fourth kingdom arising. It is going to devour, it says there in Daniel 7, it's going to devour the whole earth. This thing is going to become a worldwide system, of which eventually is going to grow into and develop into a system that's going to require a mark, that if you want to buy and sell, you don't have it, you're not going to participate. You're not going to be able to integrate with that system. And it is related directly all the way back to a Babylonian orientation. That's what underscores the system's philosophy, approach, design, and setup. It's of a Babylonian, what you could say, historical connection. Chapter 18, verse 1, we can read here a little bit about the description of this Babylonian system. After these things, John says, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power. The earth was lightened with his glory. He cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen. It's fallen. It's become a habitation of devils. It holds every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And if you read Revelation 13 and 17, you begin to get the picture of how this word fornication is integrated with religion and politics, and how that is the, what you could say, metaphor of this term fornication. We're not talking about physical fornication. We're talking about fornications of systems of religion versus the secular state. And you've got this, what you could say, interplay going on of religion and state, and the state executes punishment and judgment if you don't correspond and correlate with and compromise with and fall in line with the religion, you see. That's what it's all about. In the end times, ultimately, that's what comes together at the pinnacle of this whole system. And hence here, as you go on, you read, I heard another voice from heaven saying, verse 4 here, Revelation 18, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues, for her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her lawlessness. So the appeal here is, look, if you're a Christian, come out of her, lest you receive of her, what you could say, punishments. Don't be a part of this system. Stay away from it. Stand off from it. And all I'm saying today is an observation. I haven't really told you yet exactly what my observation is. I'm getting to it. But all I'm saying here is, as we proceed in our life in the development of this Babylonian system, and as it begins to take on more dominance in the world we're living in, we would be remiss and derelict of duty, brethren, not to, along the way in our current time, even now, to not take notice of what that system is influencing our minds as Christians to be part of, lest we end up embracing things we shouldn't embrace and become part and parcel to it, unbeknownst to ourselves. So it's important. It's important that we are aware of these things, because ultimately, look at this, verse 8, Romans 18, therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death, mourning, famine. She shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord who judges her. See that? The system's coming down. Ultimately, at the end of the day, God's bringing that system down. Verse 20, Revelation 18, verse 20. Rejoice over her, you heaven, and you holy apostles and prophets, for God has avenged you on her. Verse 23, Revelation 18, verse 23. And the light of a candle shall shine no more at all in you, this Babylonian system. The voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more. There won't be any marriages going on anymore in this. This system is done. It's over. As far as God is concerned, he's pulling the plug on it. Judgment is coming quickly. If you read down through Revelation 18, you will see the judgment is coming quickly. Characterization is almost like in a day, overnight. But it's coming quickly. He says here, no more brides, no more will be heard. The merchants, your merchants, were great men of the earth. For by your sorceries, this Babylonian system, were all nations deceived. Verse 24, and in her, this system, was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth, because this system is also going to be responsible for the death of Christians. Remember, it talks about in Daniel, it talks about God's people and this system prevailing over them, you know, taking them to task and bringing even some of God's people into martyrdom. And, of course, the sixth seal, we understand, is also a Christian martyrdom. My point in all of this here, brethren, in this regard, is just to illustrate to you that even at the end of the story, this is the end of the story here, this is the end of mankind's chapter, that worldly system comes down, you see. It comes down. So here's the observation. Here's the observation. What's my point in all this? This is what I'm talking about today. This is kind of a backwards SPS in public speaking. You have a specific purpose statement. I never told you what my specific purpose statement was. But here it is, because this is what I've been talking about. This is my whole point in talking to you about these particular things. And that is that the exercise of human rule will prove that man is totally, fundamentally incapable of providing himself with peace and prosperity for all humankind. That will, at the end of this whole segment and chapter of human history, be concluded, obvious, and evident that if it weren't for Jesus Christ coming back to save us from ourselves, we would demolish ourselves. We would eliminate ourselves. We would self-destruct. God's coming back, brethren, to save us from ourselves in that regard. And that's why, you know, we're told the way of peace, we don't know as humankinds. We're destroyed. You know, it talks about how Israel was destroyed of lack of knowledge. Well, if Israel was destroyed of lack of knowledge, how much more were the Gentile nations destroyed for lack of knowledge? I mean, yeah, it applies to Israel in the context where it says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, but you can extrapolate that and lay that over the whole globe and wrap the globe around it. People are destroyed because they lack the knowledge of the true God and Jesus Christ, his Messiah and Savior of humankind. That's what is lacking, you see. And since we're told, and I'd like to turn there real quickly to Isaiah chapter 9, Isaiah chapter 9, since we're told here that ultimately, verse 6, chapter 9, book of Isaiah, for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, the government shall be upon his shoulders, his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment, justice, from henceforth, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. What does that mean? That means simply that Jesus Christ is going to rule. That in the end of the day, when it's all over with, the good guys win. The good guys win. So it goes without saying, and I would think common sense would tell all of us, that if we understand who are the winners, then why not begin to consider getting on the team? And start looking heart to heart with our Lord Jesus Christ to make the right choices and decisions to correlate our lives in line with more of what he wants us to be like. The flesh, brethren, as I told the people in Jackson, Tennessee, as I've told the people in Bath, Ohio, over and over again, the flesh was never intended to last forever. You are only half here. You don't live in total reality. You were born for a far greater destiny. Mortal becoming immortal. You're looking for spiritually. You've gestated physically and were born. But now you're gestating spiritually for an ultimate conversion. The ultimate conversion. What is the ultimate conversion? From flesh that prevents you from going through this drywall to spirit that will allow Gerald and I to hold hands and walk through the wall and come out on the other side. That's pretty awesome stuff. That's pretty awesome stuff. Or to say, Charlie, I'll race you to the moon. That's pretty awesome stuff. You see, Jesus showed us that. He showed his guys, his buddies, things that caused them to be willing to give their lives up for it, brethren. They gave their lives up for it. They were willing to be crucified upside down for it. They were willing to die for it. Nothing would take that from them. I'm running out of time a little bit, but let me encourage you to read the latter chapter of Romans, chapter 8. If God is for you, who can be against you, you see? So if you don't get that piercing, who cares if you get ostracized by the gang, by the kids, by your buddies? If it's all predicated on what the location of your tattoo is, or how short your skirts are, or tight your pants are, or whether or not you're going to beat this guy up or beat that guy up, or play this trick on that trick, or steal this or steal that, or rob this or rob that. You know what? You don't need friends like that. Young people and or us veterans and elders. We don't need people like that. You know, we read Charles and I a note asking again for special prayer, and this person went through a litany of experiences describing how their relatives were shot and killed, dead. And I'm thinking, I'm talking to Charles and I, we talk over some of these things, you know, because we're trying to expand so that when we pray and all that, we try to really, you know, make something of value out of it. And we wonder to ourselves, you know, after I would have lost my first loved one, I'd get out of that neighborhood. I wouldn't stay there and then lose another loved one and then end up dating a guy who's then his kid gets shot and now the relationship's in the tank because he can't get his mind off the kid that he lost, so their relationship is gone because he can't get over it. I mean, it's a mess. People's lives are a mess, brethren. And oftentimes they're a mess because they make wrong choices. They make wrong decisions. They lack wisdom. Why? Because they're not reading Proverbs. They're not reading the book of Psalms. They're not studying their Bibles. They're not looking at how Jesus Christ interacted and made decisions and had an attitude or approach of a particular way on something and how that can extrapolate, maybe apply to me and my business venture here or with this relationship I've got with Sue, you know, or whatever it may be. How can I get around that corner? How did Jesus get around that corner, you know? Are there times when, you know, maybe somebody does need to be told that they're a viper? Are there times when somebody does need to be told, you know, you're a real hypocrite? Well, yeah, maybe there is, but then you ought to read Galatians chapter 6, verses 1 through about 3, so that when you do that, you've got the right attitude. Galatians 6, 1 through 3, understand something. Make sure that if you're going to correct somebody, that you yourself keep yourself in perspective because you too have been bought with the same blood. So be gentle. Be diplomatic. You know, take your time. Don't destroy the relationship over it. You know, try to figure out how can you do what has to be done and achieve the objective and preserve the relationship. Now, that is an art. That's real Christian love, you see. It's one thing to say, oh, boy, I don't like the way that guy's hair is. It's too long. He ought to get it cut. What's wrong with him? but then never figure out how to maybe get that message to him. You know, we had a guy in Bath, Ohio one time many years back. He came to a potluck and he brought pork and beans. Well, he don't know we don't eat pork. Bless his heart. He was new. He wasn't even baptized yet. And what are you going to do? Criticize him, ridicule him, and tell him, hey, there's the door. We don't eat pork. Don't you know that, dummy? Hey, we don't do that. You don't do that. You bring him in, you talk, and he says, hey, you know, I wonder why nobody ate my pork and beans. There's your door. Your door's open. Well, let me tell you, Gerald, why they didn't eat your pork and beans. Oh, I didn't know that. No kidding. Where's that in the Bible? Oh, yeah, let me show you, you know. And all of a sudden, you're in a discussion about clean and unclean meats, and guess what? Who gets edified? Gerald's edified now. Hey, this is pretty neat stuff. I didn't realize that you shouldn't eat pork. And look at that, catfish. You ought not to eat catfish either. Why? Because the skin. Oh, you tell the skin by the fins, you know, and all that. I mean, that's new revelation. And that's all it you need. But if all of a sudden, you say, you idiot, you know. How's that going to make him feel? He'd be lucky to have him come back. And rightly so. I wouldn't be back. Would you? I wouldn't be back. So we have to keep these things in mind, brethren. We have to understand, and we have to stay connected. And the way we can understand and better stay connected is with this Word of God. And so that's why I say, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, knowing who's going to be on the winning team, to not go on that team, not to make those choices. So if I can say anything today to all of us here who haven't made the decision for Jesus Christ, you need to make that decision for Jesus Christ. Because sooner or later, you're going to have that opportunity. And today's just as a good day to choose life as any other day. And those of you in the TAPE program, it's important, too, that you make a commitment to Jesus Christ if you haven't already, because it's important that you get on the team, because ultimately, you know what it's all about, brethren? Immortality. That's why we're here, to help our God rule in peace, to rule the universe, to rule planet Earth, to bring more sons into this glory. And what's that glory? Standing up, waving our hands, closing our eyes, and singing praise, worship, music? No. The glory is immortality, spirit life, as what Nicodemus was told by Christ when he said, Nicodemus, what's a flesh is flesh, spirit is spirit. You've got to be spiritual, you see. He wasn't talking about attitude. He was talking about metabolic change. That's why Nicodemus was all confused. He wasn't confused. That's why Nicodemus was talking in terms he was. Nicodemus knew exactly what Jesus was meaning. He was talking metabolically, physically. How can I get born again? I can't fit in my mother's womb again. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a metamorphosis of change of flesh in the twinkling of an eye, you know. Boom, you're going to be something that can walk through physical matter. That's awesome stuff, brother. Never lose that vision. And that's why all this is worth the effort and the time. Give your heart, give your mind to Jesus Christ. Learn to connect up with Him more so than ever today. Because I'll tell you, there's a lot of noise out there.